Welcome to the Maria Heller Show. On the net since 2000 and still going strong. If you feel like you're not getting the real news, if you feel like you're not connected spiritually, you have found your home. Maria covers a wide range of topics as only a snarky New Yorker can. Straight up, no chaser. No censorship, no corporate sponsors, thus true freedom of speech. Your subscription gives you unlimited access as a member of the smartest audience on earth. Relax and enjoy the education. Now here's Maria.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today, we're going to take a little bit of a break from coronavirus, but I think the coronavirus is going to fit in perfectly with what we're going to be talking about today. It's one of my favorite subjects that no one else ever seems to want to cover or touch, especially not mainstream media. And let me tell you about my guest. His name is Dave Gardner. He's the executive director of World Population Balance, the producer of the film Growth Busters, Hooked on Growth, and co-host of the Overpopulation podcast and the Growth Busters podcast about sustainable living. So I have a live link here to the website. It's worldpopulationbalance.org. Go over, check it out. Get involved, okay? You have children, you have grandchildren. Even if you don't, there's a whole generation counting on us. So it's time to get active. Anyway, good morning, Dave.
Hi there.
Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for the opportunity. It's good to talk to you.
Well, you know, this is an issue that very few people ever think about, let alone want to talk about. And, you know, I've been incorrectly saying, you know, looking at this coronavirus, and I think they're saying something like 50,000 worldwide have died from it so far. And I've been incorrectly saying, well, out of 7 billion people, that's really not that bad. But then the more research I did, I didn't realize we already upticked to 8 billion people.
Yeah, depending on whose numbers you rely on, we're somewhere very close to 8 billion, a lot closer to 8 than 7 these days.
Right. And, you know, I've had guests on the show before where we've discussed population growth, where we've discussed the fact that all our resources are not infinite. The planet's resources are finite. And the more people that keep being forced to be born, as I'm sure you've paid attention to seeing how three states already wanted to ban abortion during this coronavirus, which I can't understand. No matter what they do, you know, they just want to keep forcing women to be breeders. And this is throughout the world. It's not just here in America.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of related to why I decided to kind of crank up the volume a little bit about this subject, because lately we have kind of a new breed of growthists, or maybe a new wave of growthism being trotted out there. Economists who are worried because they're now seeing that birth rates have been dropping, and that it was announced just about a year ago that in 2018 the U.S. birth rate hit a 30-year low, and the alarmists are alarmed. Because they think we need a never-ending supply of more and more workers and consumers so that aggregate economic growth will continue forever, which is really pretty much physically impossible, but they don't understand that. And so they're busy imploring the young women alive today to get busy incubating more workers and consumers.
Right.
And I find that to be pretty insulting.
Well, I find it to be pretty ridiculous if you think about how the same people are pushing AI and robots replacing people for workers. So yeah. You would think that they would want less people, because once the robots take their jobs, how are these people going to survive without an insurrection?
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, you mentioned that you've been trying to have conversations about overpopulation for 20 years, and that mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it. It has been brushed under the rug, you know, just, you know, for 20 years, for more than 20 years. And I really am convinced that it is time that we bring it out into the daylight. People need to have better information. Most people don't even appreciate we're in overshoot, let alone that human overpopulation is a significant contributor to that. And we need to educate the economists, the journalists, the pundits, and the general public, and especially make sure that the young people today who are making family size decisions are armed with good information so they can make informed decisions.
Right. You know, I was reading an article you wrote today, and it reminded me, and we will get to your billboards, by the way, your One Planet, mm-hmm. One Child billboard campaign. And when I was looking at that, you know, people get so, I think it's because of their religious beliefs that they get so insulted. Oh, you can't tell me I can only have one child, you know. If you're Catholic, I mean, come on, you've always been expected to have one child a year to keep the membership of the church up. So when I was rereading your article and you were talking about today, I thought back to when I had my children. You know, I had my children in the 70s. My daughter was born in 72. My son was born in 79. Both of them were surprises because the doctors told me that I would be unable to have children. So I did have my two children, and I just considered them miracles. And I come from an Italian family, and I remember my father saying to me, "Why don't you have more kids?" And I said, "Well, you know, it's not like when you had us. You know, milk's not 30 cents a gallon anymore and bread's not 15 cents a loaf." But I had realized that I have a daughter, I have a son. I did not see any reason to have any more children. So I made the decision to basically get myself a tubal ligation to make sure that I wouldn't have any more children, because I just thought, if I'm going to have, you know, I have to be able to afford my children. I need to be able to feed them. I need to be able to give them a good home. And that was in the 70s, where it wasn't popular. You know, most of my friends ended up with 3, 4, or 5 kids. So when I look at from then till now, and especially with this coronavirus, you're seeing when people are staying at home, how panicked everybody got over, I don't have enough food, I don't have toilet paper, I don't have this, I don't have that. And everybody started scrambling for the goods. Without thinking, you know, maybe if you didn't have, you know, such a large family, you wouldn't be in that position. And I'm not criticizing people that, you know, have kids because of whatever reason they want to, but they need to stop and think about what kind of future are you going to give your children?
Well, thank you for making that decision back then. You know, I did something similar. I got a vasectomy after my second child was born. I did it for two reasons. I think one was I was concerned that I probably couldn't afford to raise a bigger family and send all those kids to school. But I was really also quite aware of the overpopulation issue and wanted to do my part. And you mentioned, you know, your grandparents, you know, it sounds like maybe they didn't pressure you too much, but a lot of people today still get a lot of pressure from parents, grandparents, and really large swaths of society to start a family sooner, have more children than they might otherwise have. So I think it's really important that we really empower the young people of today to make an informed decision that is not the result of society's expectation that they even have kids if they don't necessarily want them.
Well, it's not. I don't think the pressure is as bad as it was in my day. Because a lot of young people, and I do work with a lot of young people, a lot of them have decided not to have children. And when I ask them why, they say, because I'm selfish. And I say, well, that's a good reason. Or they'll say, I just don't want to. And I say, well, that's a good reason too. So I don't criticize them for that. And I think it's very selfish of the older generations to put that pressure on their children or grandchildren just because they want to have a grandchild. Or they want their family name continued. Believe it or not, I actually had a young man tell me that. He wanted to have a child so his family name could continue. His name was as common as the name Smith. And I was like, what? So it's hard for me to believe sometimes that young people could have so many old-fashioned ideas and yet be so smart.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that there is. I believe you're right that there is less pressure today, but you know, but it's not completely gone away. And I can't help but think that if all of those people that you mentioned who who do have that expectation that their children or grandchildren or just the young adults of today in their community will be fruitful and multiply. I really can't help but think that if we hadn't been brushing overpopulation under the rug for so long, if people around the world really understood the dire condition of the human species on this planet, that they would change their ways. They would do what I'm trying to do, which is to thank young people who make small family decisions and really celebrate that decision.
I totally agree. Listen, I've been an environmentalist since, you know, the 80s. And, you know, looking at, and in those days, I literally really believed that I could help stop the destruction of the planet and the planet's resources. And I did the best I could. But when I looked around, you always had, you know, what I used to call energy hogs, or people that have money who don't care about everybody else. But they, you know, we're finding out today with coronavirus that the people with the money do have to care about everybody else. Otherwise, they're not going to get their services done. Yeah, and you look at, Dave, you just look at, last night I was watching YouTube, and I was looking at all the different cities without humans walking about, and all the animals that are now walking through, like, the main squares, the center of town, the dolphins in Sardinia, yeah, outside of Sicily, back in the water, how clear the water is, how clear the air is. I don't think I've seen bluer skies in Arizona since this virus started. So people are starting to realize, well, maybe I didn't have to drive to work. Maybe I could have been telecommuting all this time. You know, people are coming to certain realizations that, you know, life's a lot better when you're not in the rat race, and there are better ways to do what they do than we have been doing.
Yeah, we've definitely left a little more space to other species while we're cloistered indoors. And of course, there's a lot of anecdotal discussion right now about the less pollution and the reduced carbon emissions, and we're starting to get some measurements about that. And, you know, it's pretty much common sense that you can figure out that the carbon emissions this year are going to be significantly less, that we're actually finally this year going to do what we should have been doing, you know, for the last 20 years to have a habitable, hospitable climate for future generations. We're actually doing the right thing by staying out of our cars and staying off the airplanes and what have you. So that sounds to me like you and I might share a hope, which is that maybe when we emerge from this and we kind of reboot the economy, that we don't go back completely to business as usual.
No, absolutely. I hope not. But I also want to let my listeners know, when you're talking about, and let's get into the billboard campaign. When you talk about, and your billboards are beautiful, by the way, one planet, one child, you're not forcing people to do that. You're not asking for a legal limit on how many children people have. You're asking people to just take responsibility. It's choice.
Yeah, we really, you know, because we're forced to be that respectful, which is good, but we're forced to be because the subject has been just so taboo, so poisonous, so misrepresented. People jump to a lot of erroneous conclusions about what your motivations are as soon as you start talking about the subject. So we have to be just extremely careful. And to do billboards about overpopulation, that's pretty bold as it is.
Right.
And we want to get attention, so we want to be bold, but we don't want to be insulting. We want to be respectful. We want to be inviting. And so that was kind of the thought process behind this messaging on this campaign, was how can we just invite people to join us in solving overpopulation? And the truth is, the solution doesn't require us to legislate family size, penalize people who have larger families, or ostracize them or shame them. We don't have to murder anyone. All we have to do is make sure that every couple around the world who is in that age range where they are making family size decisions, make sure that they have access to good information. And if they understand our degree of overshoot of the human race on this beautiful planet and the implications of their family size decision on the quality of life, or even maybe the survival of any child, hopefully just child instead of children, that they might create, I can't help but think that they're going to make the most loving decision that they can make, and that is to limit the size of their family.
Right.
So our billboards have the, most of them say, we chose one. They have a happy three-person family, two parents and a child in most cases, although we do have one billboard that says we chose child-free and just has a happy couple on a good adventure enjoying life, which if you're child-free, it's a little easier to afford those adventures, for example.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, years ago I had some women's organization on. I don't remember because I've done about 6,000 shows. But their whole campaign was to support women who choose not to have children and not to shame women that choose not to have children. You know, when I look at, you know, I live in a small town in Arizona and there's a lot of poverty here. And when I look at the parents, you know, sometimes you got young kids and they're pushing a stroller and they've got two kids in the stroller. They got two more kids hanging on. The mother is pregnant again. And I look at them and in my mind, I say, these kids were born into poverty and they no longer have any way out of that. It's not like when I was a kid growing up in the 50s and 60s where you had opportunity. They don't today. So I worry about those children. You know, when I see them, I just worry about them. And I'm like, what kind of future are they going to have? So I think it's time for people to get a little less selfish, because I, you know, for a lot of people, having children is a very selfish act. When I hear, you know, why they want children, I'm like, listen, this isn't a romantic thing. You know, that child's going to be with you for at least 20 years. And in this economy, maybe 40 years. There's a lot that goes into parenting. You know, I don't think that they realize how much is involved. And I've often wondered, maybe they should take classes before they decide to get pregnant.
Yeah, there's so much going on there. Not too long ago, maybe about three or four episodes back of the, or maybe more like six, of the Overpopulation podcast, we interviewed a couple of really brilliant young women who wrote a paper with this nonprofit that we frequently collaborate with called Having Kids. If you're not familiar with them, I'd really recommend you check out havingkids.org. Uh-huh. And they are all about, and this paper was all about, moving to a better model that's more centered around the rights and the health of the children. You know, it's pretty well known and acknowledged that everybody has the right to have a child. And apparently they have the right to have as many children as they want. That's some kind of a God-given right. And I'm not going to even try to argue about that because we'll probably get nowhere with that. But when a couple is making a decision about that, what about the rights of that child or children that they might be considering creating? Don't they have some rights, even though they're not here yet? And I think they have a right to a future in a beautiful world where the climate isn't trying to kill them, where there's a abundant food that's easy enough to get a job, you can have a roof over your head, and clean air and water. And that's just not, in the past, that wasn't considered. But that's now starting to become a part of the consideration. You know,
right.
You need to think about the child or children that you might create. And of course, all of the children in the world, you should be considering their welfare too when you make that decision.
Well, as a mother and a grandmother, I think about everybody else's kids, you know. It's not just my children.
Good for you.
And I feel for them. You know, here in the town I live in, even under normal circumstances, they keep the school open in the summer so the kids can have breakfast and lunch. Okay, because not everybody can regularly afford to feed their children. So now we have a situation where the parent would, you know, dependent on their paycheck, and now that paycheck's been missing for 2, 3, maybe 4 weeks, What are they supposed to do to feed their family? You know, these are dire times. And, you know, you can't regret, okay, you have your children now, they're here. But when you have a system set up where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, there's no compassion, there's no empathy. I mean, you know, small towns and whatnot, and some churches, I will give them, you know, credit, will put out, you know, some kind of food program, food banks or, you know, whatever. But that's a terrible way to live. Listen, when I was a kid, we were very poor, okay? My father was the sole supporter of our family. But we always had food on the table, but not three times a day, not as I was a young child. And I remember, you know, many times, I don't know if you've ever said this to your parents, where, you know, they give you some kind of story and I would just say, but I didn't ask to be born. Okay.
Yeah.
When they want
yeah.
to make you feel guilty for being alive, you just say, I didn't ask to be born. And I thought about that when I had my children. You know, they were well spaced. You know, I was lucky that way, I guess, since I wasn't supposed to have kids. You know, I had two surprises 7 years apart. But I knew, you know, what myself and my husband were earning, what kind of lifestyle I could give those children. And I also knew that I didn't want to have more. I said, I got a boy, I got a girl, I'm done. I did my service. That's how I felt. So
that makes you...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Pardon me, I didn't mean to interrupt. That makes you wonder about that you know, the families that you mentioned that you see where they have four or five children and they really can't afford to give them a good life. They maybe can't even really afford to feed them. And you wonder, okay, so why they kind of know their financial situation. Why do they have that many children? And I think it's worth exploring that for a minute, because I think there's, you know, maybe three or four possible reasons. One could be that they didn't know how expensive it is to raise a child. Mm-hmm. So that could be there's just some information that wasn't available to them or that they hadn't found. Two, of course, there frequently is some religious component to that where the mm-hmm. church really does provide this expectation that they will not practice family planning and just leave it in God's hands how many children they have. Three, there is has been this kind of general societal expectation that you know, having a child is something to celebrate, and you know, and families are big, and so it's the norm has been, I guess what I'm trying to say is the norm has been to have three or four or five kids, and in fact the average family was five kids back in 1960. Fortunately, today the average family is worldwide is a little less than 2.5. So voluntarily, we've been working on solving overpopulation without having to legislate family size.
Right.
But the norm has been kind of lagging behind that. And that's one of the other things we're really trying to do with the billboard campaign is change the norm so that it's unusual. It'll become unusual if somebody has three or four or five kids, and that it's a lot more customary for someone to be mm-hmm. a couple to be child-free or to
right.
have just one child. Because we really need to accelerate our progress in reducing family size, because we've just gotten, you know, we're just butting our heads right up against the very limits of this planet's ability to meet our needs, and we're really crippling life-supporting ecosystems today.
I know.
So it's an emergency.
Right. I say that all the time. I said humans are the only animal on Earth that's willingly or unwittingly destroying their own web of life, what we need to survive, you know, our air, our water, our soil. I mean, it goes on, the list goes on and on. But I did want to add one thing to the reasons that you just gave. Another reason is a lack of education and a lack of birth control, a lack of family planning. You know, here in the United States, you see how ugly the government is against Planned Parenthood, how they demonize Planned Parenthood as if the only thing they do is abortion, which is 3% of what they do. How many kids are not able to get birth control? They're not educated on birth control. A lot of southern states, you know, the Bible Belt, they want to take sex education out of school. A lot of them have already succeeded. And, you know, the abstinence-only programs, come on, it's a normal thing for young people to want to have sex. So abstinence only and not being able to educate these children on how to protect themselves is ridiculous. So, you know, we've got that whole education piece that's missing here.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I got a little distracted and forgot to continue with that list. And if you kind of expand that to globally, you know, here in the overdeveloped world in the United States, where you and I both are, it's not quite, you know, it's not quite as bad, but obviously there are still instances of that. But around the world, there are a lot of there's a lot of misinformation about contraception, and in some places it is extremely inconvenient or unaffordable to access it. And so we definitely got to fix that challenge.
Absolutely.
Sure.
I think you I read pretty much every link you sent me yesterday, so I can't tell you which one it was from. But you mentioned that Thailand has what they call condoms and cabbages cafes, and that police there actually hand out condoms in a program they have. Now, here in America, you know, that's unheard of. Everybody wants to fight about giving, you know, young boys condoms for free or birth control to young women for free. And yet, you know, we would normally consider Thailand a third world country by comparison, but they seem to be doing a better job than we are.
Yeah, you know, I don't, you know, I'm a fairly noted an articulate expert on this subject these days, and I speak regularly at college campuses and service clubs, some of the more daring ones, but I am never invited to come into elementary school or middle school or even a high school to talk about overpopulation. We're scared to death of that subject. But in Thailand, back in the 1960s, the average number of kids was over six, and today it's about 1.5. And it was the country just decided, actually, they weren't that concerned about overpopulation at the time. They were just concerned about the financial well-being of their citizens. And they realized that if they had smaller families, that they would be able to afford to meet the needs of their families. Mm-hmm. And they had a great public servant, Mechai Viravaidya, who was just brilliant. And he just made it fun. So it couldn't be uncomfortable. There was no reason to brush it under the rug. He just made it a kind of a national goal to have family planning in place and have it be fun. And the results were phenomenal. And we thought a lot about that when we decided to do the One Planet, One Child billboard campaign. We thought, when is that going to happen around the world? When is it going to happen in the U.S.? We need to demonstrate, you know, just one part of the kind of national campaign that we need today, just like we did Just Say No to Drugs, you know, a couple of decades ago.
Right, exactly. Well, I think you had one stat that said that a global average of one child per woman for 100 years would contract world population from today's nearly 7.8 billion to below 3 billion. So we're not telling people never to have children. But it's you know, the planet just cannot sustain the amount of consumption, and Americans consume more than any other country on Earth. The Earth is crying, you know, when I look at, you know, this morning I was surfing through the Weather Channel, avalanche in Idaho, 6.5 in Idaho, Japan's earthquake is, volcano, I mean, is spewing ash into the sky. Yeah, you know, I'm looking at all these disasters, even for Easter weekend, you know, the horrific storms that the United States is supposed to have. And humans don't understand that they contribute to it. I'm certainly not going to say that the Earth doesn't have her own involvement going on. But you look at the Earth right now without people all over it, and she's healing herself in a matter of weeks.
Yeah, and you brought up consumption, and that reminds me, and the difference between, say, the United States, where we have a pretty low birth rate today, and there are still some countries in the world that have birth rates, you know, fertility rates of 4, 5, and even 6, and it reminds me of some of the myths that persist about overpopulation, so I'm hoping maybe we can go through a few of those in the next segment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, Dave, we're going to take a short break right now, so hang with us. We will be right back. Hi, this is Maria. I don't often get to talk directly to the listeners here on the Gary Null Network, but I felt like doing that today. I know a lot of you really enjoy my show, but you might not know that I do 4 shows a week over at my website, maria.net. So if you're loving the show you get to hear on Sunday, come on over to my site and subscribe, because I've got hundreds of hours of great shows on pretty much every topic in the universe. And that again is maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. And now we can get back to this excellent show. Thanks. Okay, welcome back to the show. I'm speaking with Dave Gardner. He's the Executive Director of World Population Balance. And we're talking about the taboo subject that no one seems to ever want to talk about, overpopulation. Dave, right before the break, you said something that triggered something for me. Looking at the coronavirus and the destruction it's doing, you know, to human lives around the planet, I thought about a report that I reported on about 3 weeks before, which was that 8.8 million people a year are killed from air pollution. Now, I doubt that this coronavirus is going to kill 9 million people. Even their projections say would be less. But how is it that the world didn't stop for 8.8 million that die every year from air pollution?
I'm going to suppose that that is partly it's the speed of the deaths. We tend to ignore the damage that we are doing in slow motion. You know, coronavirus is happening. It's happening fast, and it really is, you know, it's killing, you know, one of your neighbors today, perhaps. So that's really close to home. And deaths from air pollution, it's a lot harder to connect the dots, and it takes longer, and frequently it's someone, frequently there's no one that you know, no one in your family, where the doctor says, I'm sorry to tell you that you, you know, you lost your grandmother due to air pollution. You just don't get that story.
Right. Yeah. They'll never say that was the factor that took them out. It'll always be this, that, the other thing. But when those facts come out, whether they're from the UN or whatever, you know, the World Health Organization, everybody just ignores it. And I'm like, what about this fact? You know, and yes, I will say certain members of my family like to call me Debbie Downer. But I have all these facts in my head. I've been working on the environment my whole life. And sometimes it can get you down when you see, you know, I've been warning people all these years, you know, reading these books, telling people to do this, that, the other thing. And now I look at how filthy our planet is. The ocean is super filthy. The coral reefs are dying. The air we breathe is disgusting. We're running out of topsoil, so good luck growing food. How can no one else see the projection if we just keep overfilling the planet with more people to be fed and clothed and housed?
Maria, I'm going to be a little bit lighthearted about this and say the only explanation I can have is that you and I are both missing some chromosome that blinds you to this, because it does. It seems so painfully obvious. You know, and in the first paragraph on the homepage at One Planet, One Child .org, there's a link to scientific reports. You know, there's so many that we can't even list them on. We can't even list them all. All of the scientific reports that tell us, if we were paying attention to them, they tell us that we are crushing the planet's ability to meet our needs. We're really stealing from future generations, and we just don't think about it because the news media barely reports on it. You really have to be awakened to it to start noticing that news when it is brought forward. But some of the evidence, if I can just rattle it off,
sure.
We are in the middle. Yeah, we are pushing other species off the planet at an unheard of rate. We're forcing them to go extinct. We are depleting fertile soils. It's estimated that we might have about 29 harvests left before the soils of the planet won't grow food anymore, or will hardly grow food. We basically have vacuumed the soil of all of its nutrients, and the only way we can feed most of the world today is by artificially adding stuff back into the soil so that it'll grow our food. And that's not a long-term sustainable. And in the process, we're creating these vast ocean dead zones, and we are killing the climate, because all of that industrial agriculture is one of the biggest causes of carbon emissions and climate change. We are pumping the world's major rivers and aquifers dry, and yet, because of our, you know, our obsession with growth and this myth that growth leads to prosperity, because of that, we ignore all of that evidence, and we just assume that, well, technology has gotten us this far. I'll bet you we're going to come up with some kind of technological miracle that'll solve the problems that these scientists are warning us about. But they're getting harder. They're getting harder to solve, and our society's gotten so complex and fragile that we'd have to get everything perfectly right just to keep on meeting the needs of 7 billion people on the planet, let alone the 11 billion that the United Nations expects by the turn of the century.
Right. Well, you know, I saw a fabulous documentary on Netflix called Chasing Ice. I don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, it was magnificently beautiful. It wasn't done by, you know, a government agency. It was done by a photographer. But while I was watching it, it was absolutely stunningly beautiful to watch. So as an artist, I really appreciated the beauty. But my left side of my brain was saying, what's under that ice? You know, that ice is putting that fresh water into the ocean, disrupting the salinization of the ocean. And then, you know, the other scientists, this is what, I can't even enjoy a movie because my brain is working in two different ways. And I'm like, okay, what kind of bacteria and disease is in that ice that we haven't seen for millions of years that's about to hit the planet? So when this coronavirus came out, I also had those thoughts blowing through my mind. You know, is this something we've released? Is this something that we've created? So, you know, I look at it from so many different angles, but, you know, people still want to deny that this is happening. And when you have that young girl, Greta Thunberg, and she's one of many children around the world fighting for their future, she gets demonized in the press. She gets demonized by the president of the United States. And to me, that young girl's a hero. And all the girls and boys like her, they're heroes. They're fighting for their lives, literally.
Yeah, she is a hero. And I just loved it when she talked about the fairy tale of eternal economic growth, which is one of the, it is a fairy tale. And that's one of the things that, you know, our obsession with economic growth has kept us from dealing rationally with the climate crisis for the last 20 or 30 years, because we were never willing to take economic growth off the table. We have to find a solution that doesn't retard robust economic growth. And
Well, right now, the world isn't having any economic growth. Americans are learning a real hard lesson. Maybe this will open our eyes that it's not just about the money. Okay. You know, my mother used to say, you know, how the dollar bill says, in God we trust. My mother used to say, in God we trust till money goes bust. And you can't eat money, as people are finding out. And what's interesting is, even in my small town right now, nobody wants to take cash out of your hand, okay? Because the cash might be diseased. And now that, you know, you look at them moving a digital currency, it's like, that's a solution. So, you know, listen, these are crazy days, but, you know, many, many moons ago, some of the best Native Americans leaders in this country said that one day you'll realize that you can't eat money, you know, when the last tree is gone, when the last clean water is gone, the last clean air. They warned us 300 years ago, and we paid no attention.
Yeah, and, you know, that reminds me that, you know, what is an economy for? The purpose of the economy is to meet our needs. It's not to just have some, you know, infinite number of dollar signs change hands every year, which is what we're busy measuring and worshiping. And it really is to meet our needs. So we're figuring out now, because of this coronavirus emergency, we're figuring out how to get needs met in a different way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the good news is that we are doing, you know, we're slowing down the economy, and that's good for the climate, but we're not doing it in a way that is enjoyable for anybody, because we had to do it overnight. We couldn't plan it. Right. And what I'd like to see us recognize from this is, wow, it does make sense to slow down economically if we want our children to actually be able to eat and live decent lives. So what can we do? How can we do this in a more elegant, planned way? And I know that there are elegant and planned ways where we just have to kind of, we have to get rid of the stuff that doesn't matter, get rid of the, right. the wasteful, you know, the really big footprint over consumption things. Nobody really needs to, you know, to have, three vacation homes and hop on a private jet to go from one to the other every other month. No one really needs to take, you know, six transatlantic flights every year, or hop on a plane, fly halfway across the country to go see their favorite football game.
Right.
Their football team play.
Well, now there's no games to see. So people,
yeah.
you know, listen,
we
there
don't
is
have
a,
that now.
Right, there's a silver lining in this. There's, you know, I follow a lot of different social media, especially the ones I'm not banned off, because I am banned on a lot of them permanently.
You bad girl.
I'm a bad, dirty grandma. I call myself dirty grandma. I do post some recipes, you know, being Italian, you know, and having been raised poor. You know, we knew how to eat cheap and eat well and eat healthy. Eat vegan. So a lot of people are learning how to cook for the first time because of this virus. They say that more people are baking their own bread than ever before. I guess the bread making machines are selling out big time. People are, you know, people say, oh, I'm bored. What should I do? I always say, read a book. Okay, there's a concept. Read a book. You know, people are spending more time with their family, some for good, some for bad. They're realizing what they don't need, you know. They're realizing, oh, maybe I didn't need to go out to dinner and spend $100 when I could make a good dinner for myself, you know, $10 instead. So I think there's a lot of good that's happening at the same time, although a lot of people, unfortunately, are predicting a huge baby boom after this.
Yeah, we'll see. The dire, both the dire economic and environmental prospects may keep people from going down that road. Plus, I think there's got to be a lot less casual sex right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know it's bad when the porn sites are giving you free porn. So,
yeah. But, you know, I wonder if you'd allow me the, you know, we're kind of talking about the economic contraction that's going on right now. And you've mentioned that you're a vegan. And in the Medium essay that I wrote that I published last week, I talked about the fact that we could, you know, that we, if we really want to get out of overshoot, we probably should all be vegan, or at least give up eating meat. And we all need to give up our huge houses and all the jet travel and give up our cars. There are a lot of things that we really should do that, you know what, to be honest, I'm sure you would agree with me. You were not going to see, everyone in the industrialized world give up all of those things. Maybe we might inspire them at some point to cut way back on them. But right. But when I sat back and did the math, I said, you know, it's if we're trying to get out of overshoot, and the Global Footprint Network tells us that we are practically living almost at a two-planet scale right now, mm-hmm. where we need to cut our impact in half if we want to stop injuring the ecosystem's ability to meet future needs. Okay, so the two major contributors to that, one are how many of us there are, our population, and the other is our behavior, our economy, our economic activity. So we've got to cut that in half. So how do we do that? If we're really uncomfortable with overpopulation, and so many people are, they're afraid that if I'm just saying I want to celebrate small family choices, somehow they're going to find a way to assume that I'm trying to tell them what to do, or that I'm mm-hmm. trying to choose what race should be doing that, or what country should be doing that. And I want to assure you, it's far from it. I'm talking about everyone around the world, no matter mm-hmm. what color their skin is, no matter whether they live north of the equator or south of the equator, whether they're rich or poor. This is a problem that is affecting all of us and that we all need to know about and do something about. So what do we do? If we're uncomfortable with the overpopulation side, let's just deal with it on the economic activity side. So that means we have to basically cut the world's economy, the global economy, in half. So if you do that, that means, you know, kind of roughly, that means everybody in the U.S., well, let me rephrase that. We take 7.5 billion, roughly, people. We divide the global economy, which is almost 90 trillion, we divide it by, let's say, 7.5 billion people. We end up with about $11,000 U.S. per person right now at two-planet living. We need to cut that in half.
All okay, right.
So that means that we all need to live as though our annual income was about $5,000 or $6,000 a year. That's what we have to do if we're not willing to just admit that we have a population problem and really embrace this small family decision and try to have a one-child family norm for 100 years.
Right. Well, you know,
that makes dealing with overpopulation look a little bit
right.
less scary.
I know, but as soon as, you know, listen, I've seen so much crazy stuff because when I look on social media, everybody wants to blame China for eating bats and cats and whatnot for this mm-hmm. disease. And my answer to them is the same. Do you think the animals you're eating in this country are any cleaner? Especially since we ship them to China for processing and back.
Don't remind.
So, you know, it reminds me of Melanie Joy's book, you know, of why we love our dogs and eat pigs. So we need to stop judging each other. But as soon as people say we need to go meat free, you know, I see the press, even some alternative press, immediately say, oh, this is a conspiracy. This is some kind of conspiracy to get you to, you know, we have plenty of meat, whatever. But they haven't paid attention to the way the animals are processed today. You know, it's not the same as, you know, when my grandmother was, you know, plucking her own chickens, you know, living in Brooklyn, plucking her own chickens before she cooked it. People don't realize they play Russian roulette every time they put their fork to their mouth. And I've been telling my audience for years, decades, you only have two votes that count. One is your cash and the other one is your fork. And if, you know, you think about these earthquakes, you think about Idaho, you know, avalanches, floods, what's floating in that water? All that animal waste from the factory farms is in the people's water. It's in their air. They literally have lung disease from the feces in the air that they breathe. This is not the way humans were supposed to live. We were convinced this was a good way to live, but it's not the way we were supposed to live. We should be in harmony with the planet and all the other living things, but humans somehow forgot that we're part of the animal kingdom.
Yeah, we can't. We really can't do that. We can't live in harmony with 7 or 8 or 11 billion people on the planet. We really have to find a way to get back to around maybe 2 or 3 billion. The most serious scientific inquiry suggests that we might be able to be in sustainable balance and have, you know, modestly decent lives with 2 to 3 billion people on the planet. Most people assume, well, that'll never happen. It's baked into the cake that we're going to hit 11 billion because that's what the UN says. But
Right. Truth
is, if we got serious about it and just said, you know what, we love one-child families, let's do that, 100 years, we'd be there.
Well, you know, I see some people commenting on the virus saying that this is Darwin's natural selection. And, you know, I don't get involved in those conversations because I know I'll get demonized within two comments. And sometimes it's just not worth it. But you look at this virus and the speed, like you said, the speed at which it travels, although there are people that are saying it's not real and whatnot. It's craziness. And it does make you wonder, you know, is this just the way that humans are supposed to go?
Yeah, you know, it's not going to take out enough of us to put a dent in the 80 million plus people that we add to the planet every year. But it is, I think it's an example, an unfortunate, ugly example of how Mother Nature will solve our overpopulation problem if we don't, I'm still hopeful that we are smart enough to solve our overpopulation problem in a really elegant way. But if we don't, then it'll happen to us just like it happens to every other species.
Exactly, which is, pretty sad. But
yeah, it won't be pretty.
No, and you may find this humorous or not. I don't know whether my doctor did or not. But I went in for my physical, a month or two ago. And at the end of the physical, and you got to get, I'm 70, okay? The doctor comes out and he says to me, Marie, you're going to live for at least another 30 years. My first reaction when he said it was, I screamed, no. And he looked at me and he had like a nervous laugh. And I said, I don't want to live in a Mad Max world. I said, that's not a thrill for me to think about 30 years from now, because I don't want to be here for that.
Yeah, and everything we're doing is pretty much guaranteeing. In fact, we might not have to wait 30 years to see that.
Well, that's why you and I are still at it. We still, with our missing chromosome, we're still working hard to try to wake people up, because there's a lot of beauty on this planet. Life is supposed to be pleasurable. We should be enjoying the beauty, the plants, the animals, this clean water. That was a gift to humans. We're part of nature. Nature speaks of abundance. We're entitled to that. And abundance is not how much money you have in the bank or how many cars you own. It's happiness. And people in America, I think, especially, have forgotten. Our founding fathers, we're all supposed to have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we're the unhappiest country on earth.
Wow, you really get it. Thank you for that.
Hey, I told you my mind goes in strange places, so I never know what's coming out of my mouth, but it usually comes out somewhat coherently.
we just need you to be a guest every night on the cable news networks.
They'll never put me on TV. Are you kidding me? Listen, even when a progressive radio station was forming years ago, all my listeners had suggested you got to carry the Maria Heller Show. And he called me, and he kept me on the phone for about 2 hours. And he said to me, you're a loose cannon. He says, our stockholders will never allow you on air.
Maria, when we did a one-month crowdfunding campaign for the One Planet, One Child billboard campaign, just to raise enough money, we were just trying to raise $15,000 to do kind of a phase one, a one-month-long trial run in a couple of major markets. And in order to make sure that we raised the money, I thought maybe I could be a guest on some of the environmental podcasts to talk about this. And, even the environmental podcasts, very few were interested in addressing the overpopulation subject.
Well, people just want to pick and choose. It's kind of like a Bible picker, pick and choose what applies to you and disregard the rest. You can't be, years ago, I think it was Isaac Singer that said, there's no such thing as an meat-eating environmentalist. But if you look at an environmentalist, I used to get Sierra magazine, but then I saw their recipes had meat recipes. I canceled the subscription. Okay. You can't say you're out there for the environment if you're putting in, recipes for beef stew. So I do vote with my dollar, and I do write these people and let them know why I canceled. But I find that even in the vegetarian groups, if you bring in, say you wanted to bring the subject to them, they'd argue with you too. Everybody just wants their little piece of the pie, but they don't want to see the panorama and how the panorama all fits together.
Yeah, you're so right. And I feel like I have to confess that I haven't gone vegan or vegetarian. I eat very little meat, but I haven't yet, given it all up. You might be. You sound pretty close to perfect, but I know
I'm not super perfect. Every now and then I get tempted by a slice of real pizza. So I am Italian, You can take everything else away, but not my pizza.
If everybody just gave up, just moderated a lot of this stuff.
Even meat-free Mondays, and people balked at that. You know, but they don't realize that, you know, it's the protein, the overconsumption of protein that creates most of the diseases Americans have. Okay. But that's, you know, I've got tons of shows on that for people to listen to when that's not really what we're talking about today. And listen, even if you're just eating very little, everybody can do whatever they can do. I don't judge anybody. You know, I go out to dinner with my friends and they're like, you know, I said, listen, don't ask me if you don't want to know. Enjoy whatever it is you're ordering. I don't really care, okay? I'm only responsible for myself, but if everybody cut back a little, we'd be healthier for it. And certainly the planets, the animals would certainly be healthier for it.
So we should just do that with family size too.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. This has been a pleasure talking to you.
The pleasure was all mine, Maria.
Okay, well, stay in touch for sure and send me all your new articles and stuff.
Will do. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Dave Garner, check it out. OnePlanetOneChild.org. There's so many links he has. You can also check out WorldPopulationBalance.org. Listen, it's up to us. No one else is coming to save us. We have to do this. Anyway, thanks for listening. Tomorrow, Michael Rakir is back on the show, and I'll see you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.